ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29. Talks between Narada and King Prishnabhari, text 73.
Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Prabhupada, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Sadhguru, Bhaktivinoda.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. So this conversation is rather long, and it continues for a few more
days. Yeah,
it's quite lengthy and detailed. So in this section, we'll hear more about the effects of fruitful activities that a conditioned soul goes through in this world, when it's in the lower, middle, upper planetary systems. To some degree, we go through these different stages. So long as we're in the material sphere, we are affected by the gross and subtle effects of material existence. One can say, according to mental devotion, the cause of our existence in this material world is because of avidya, or ignorance. Because of our ignorant state, we've come to the material world to try to become separate entities, separate in relation to Krishna, separate in terms of serving Krishna, and separate when it comes to the identity. So we're identifying with the body as the real self. Sometimes we identify the sexual body as the real self. And because of that, we're perpetually thrown into a repeated cycle of birth and death. Not only that, we're also thrown into a repeated cycle of desire and sinful activity. And even though this, the example that we see here is a much harder, sometimes, you know, it's common for people to say that a child is pure, a child is innocent, they haven't done anything, they just came out. But as this verse is pointing out, no one is actually, not even a child is born pure in this material world. It's just a matter of time till everything begins to manifest. Everything is still in its unmanifested state because the gross and the subtle bodies are still developing. Or you could think of it as the gross body is developing and the subtle body is slowly waking up. But remember, the subtle body, it provides our future body. So if you want to understand the type of body that we have now, if you want to understand our current or our past desires, we look at the body we have now. This is the result of our past desires. And that's just the way it is. There's no ifs or buts about it. In the previous verse, actually, text 65, Narada Muni explains that there's no possibility of concocting anything mentally without having perceived it in a previous body. So for some persons who think you only live this one life, it's just this moment, this verse explains that no, actually we have lived many lifetimes, and as we change bodies, we take the blueprint for our next body, which is the mind, and that prepares our next body. And although we might be in the womb, or we might still be young children developing, all the impressions, all the unfulfilled desires from a previous life, all the ambitions we've had from previous lives are still sitting there in their unmanifested state. And it's only a matter of time till when the body and the subtle body fully develop that then these desires start to take seed. And proclivities to satisfy these desires get stronger and stronger, and then we actually want to go and fulfill in action these unfulfilled desires. So it is actually quite binding. And that's why we try to keep away from performing sinful activity. But there's two effects that we get from sinful activities. Is that we get the physical and the emotional reaction, and the other consequence of that is that we get the indirect suffering in the form of unmanifested seeds that will fuel us to perform more sinful activity. So the example that the Nectar of Devotion gives is that when a person performs sexual activities, they will get the reaction, physical and emotional. You get attached to a person, you get an STD or whatever disease, you fall pregnant, whatever happens. That's the physical and emotional reactions that we get. But then the other type of reaction is that it keeps on fueling your desire for more sexual exploits, for more sexual activity. So in that way, we become bound by the desires. They keep on fructifying, they keep on multiplying, because we keep on performing sinful activities. So when we perform sinful activities, they get stored in our subtle body, and then they manifest either in this lifetime or in the next lifetime. So it's a dangerous affair to play with the human form of life, because we can either use it to liberate ourselves, or we are going to use it to bind ourselves to material existence. So a very interesting point in this translation. It speaks about the living entity with undeveloped senses does not cease to exist materially, even though he may not exactly in contact with the sense objects. And the Kirpa Prabhupada gives the example of when one is in a dreaming state, they are their senses, whether their mind is thinking about the opposite sex, and although there is no physical form of the opposite sex, still there is an effect. There are nocturnal emissions. So similarly, sometimes we do not see the seeds of sinful activities as they get implanted every single day. But even if the objects of sense gratification, whether gross or subtle, are not right in front of us, they are engrossed in our minds. And that is why in many yoga practices, whether it's bhakti or kundalini or standard yoga, there is such a focus on mental clarity and trying to control the mind, because the mind is where everything begins. The Bhagavad Gita explains there's a thinking, feeling and willing responsibilities of the mind, that everything that we actually start to do, it all begins in the mind. We start planning, we perceive things, we think about them, we meditate on them, and then we act them out. So if you keep on dialing it back, it's all beginning in the mind. But we use our senses to feel or touch, it's stimulating, and the emotions and the effects get stored in the mind. So we're driving on the freeway, or we're in a shop, music is playing, or we hear someone talking about something. Later on, you're sleeping, you're dreaming, it pops up in your dream. But it happens to me so many times. Sometimes I dream about random things and I'm thinking, where did this come from? But we have to retrace our steps and see what goes into the mind. What goes into the mind and what comes out. And sometimes it's even from previous lifetimes, we don't know. So there's a great need and focus to actually control the mind, because the mind is the source of future bodies, we could say. The mind is creating an outline of what our future life or our future body is going to be. So it's very important to try to control the mind. So as I mentioned, the sensual images or any images are recorded in our mind on a daily basis. So that's why the devotee, when one comes to the process of bhakti, the devotee tries to engage all the senses, including the mind, in Krishna conscious activities or activities that remind one of Krishna. So whether it's smelling, eating, touching or seeing, so the visual, the audio, we're just trying to remind ourselves of Krishna as much as possible, and that purifies the material senses and awakens our spiritual senses. So that's why devotees like Prahlada Maharaj, Amrish Maharaj, they're glorified for having engaged the entire bodies in activities of Krishna consciousness. And once we forget Krishna, once we forget the connection that Krishna has even in this material world as the controller or being super soul in everyone's heart, when we remove Krishna from that equation, all is lost really. And once again we go back into the material pool of constantly having contaminated thoughts, and those contaminated thoughts planting seeds of desires that will never be satisfied. Because that is the nature of material desires. They will never be satisfied. And the more we try to satisfy them, the more we will fail at trying to satisfy them. So it's kind of like you're caught between a rock and a hard place. You cannot win against material desires, actually. On your own, you can't win. They will destroy you. And they will destroy one. If we cannot control our desires, if we cannot control the mind will destroy us. As Arjuna mentioned, it is so difficult to control the mind, to subdue it, even more difficult than controlling the wind. But if one engages the mind in Krishna consciousness by performing activities that are related to Krishna, the mind can become one's friend instead of being an entity that literally agonizes us every single day. So when one meditates on Krishna, one's quality of life actually increases, and one's desires transform, one starts to change. In the nectar of devotion, when we see about a living entity's journey into their relationship with Krishna, we begin with how bhakti is all auspicious and how the material desires start to get released from the living entity based on their service, based on their hearing and their chanting. So the kleshas are the ropes that actually bind us to performing material activities or activities separate from Krishna's desire. As we perform those activities, we forget Krishna. But when we come to bhakti, even at the early stages when we feel the raft of the material energy, kind of when we feel the grip of Maya loosen a bit, we feel the distress also fade off. And that is just the beginning. The goal of bhakti is not to just get rid of distress, but to develop our loving propensity towards Krishna. So as the tight grip of material existence loosens by Krishna's mercy and the spiritual master's mercy, we start working on developing our relationship with Krishna through the nine processes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So while we're hearing, we're chanting, remembering Krishna, worshipping the deity, having prasadam, presenting holy places, you name it, Prabhupada has packed it all into our morning program. So by doing these activities, actually our mind becomes purified. And although the modes of material nature are around us, and we encounter persons also around us who are influenced by the modes, the more we practice Krishna consciousness, the more our mind becomes strong and elevated, and we're no longer dragged in the modes of ignorance or dispassion. We try to function on the platform of goodness, which is a springboard to pure goodness, where we can, in a more constant and steady way, be conscious of Krishna all the time. So this is the process of bhakti. Another point that is mentioned is that what I thought of speaking about next, the section where the effects of fruitive activities reserved in the subtle body appear in three component stages. So it goes into more details in the nectar of devotion, when we see how our actions influence our present life, and our actions will mold our future bodies. So if we look at how the evolution of unmanifested sinful reactions, I thought that would be something that we can spend time on, and that also helps us understand the fact that it's the last point Prabhupada makes in the purport, that it is wrong to say that a child is as good as a liberated soul, because even a child has seeds of desires that are yet to be fulfilled. The material desires are sitting there, and in due course of time, once the gross and subtle body develop, these desires will be acted on. So if you look at unmanifested sinful reactions, these are a result of the ignorance that we're in. We're in the body, I'm man, I'm woman, this is the highest aspect of myself. And therefore, to satisfy the body, I strive in different ways. So I strive to please my senses, whether it's my tongue, my genitals, my belly, my anger. So lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, madness. These are all ways in which the living entity slowly drops in the evolution of consciousness. So if you look at the first point, aparadha, when we are born or when we are just living, there are so many desires from previous lifetimes that have still not been agitated due to time. So they're still, we could say, they're lying dormant in their state. And after some time, due to association with the laws of material nature, associating with living entities who are also influenced by the laws of material nature, and when we're lacking in our spiritual identity, we develop a psychological disposition to enjoy the material body. So we develop sinful ideas, we develop sinful tendencies. Now when I say sinful, I'm talking about anything that takes us away from awakening our natural identity, that we're part and parcel of Krishna, we're such in another. So activities that take us away from realizing that we are such in another and we're servants of Krishna. So at that stage, that kutam, where we have our sinful proclivities or psychological disposition towards performing sinful activities. So, you know, put ourselves in ignorance by drinking this, by injecting that. We lower the quality of our existence. We lower the quality of our consciousness and the quality of our minds. And therefore, we find no problem in eating dead bodies. We find no problem in intoxicating ourselves beyond the point of being cognizant, beyond the point of having any moral disposition. So we find all these activities to be normal, to be okay, to be satisfactory to the self, that is the body and the mind. These things bring satisfaction. So once we develop these proclivities to continue acting in this way, the desire to keep on expanding our sinful activities, get bigger and bigger. So not only do you start thinking, maybe I should do this, or maybe I should go on a weekend-long mission of drunkenness, or sexual exploitation, or a month-long binge of just eating dead bodies that are rotting. So we start thinking about it, and after some time, we are going to act now. So from the process of thinking, it becomes action. So if the mind then focuses on performing that one particular action, the desire becomes so strong that you meditate on that object of sense gratification and go out and try to get satisfaction from that object of sense gratification. And that's why we explained in 262, when you don't get that satisfaction from your sense gratification, you become angry. Right, whether from whatever sense you're trying to gratify, when you do not satisfy that need or that desire, you become angry. And we see that all the time. If you're not getting the recognition that you want, there's all these subtle desires as well, not just the gross physical stuff. There's, if people are not recognizing how great you are, you know, you've given big donations to a hospital, you want your name on the door, and if no one puts your name, you get angry. Right? You need to satisfy your false sense, I'm Dr. So-and-so, I have done this, I gave $1 million. I am Donald Trump, I tested positively to coronavirus, which is negative. Whatever it is, right? We just do whatever it is, and when we're not satisfied after chasing that desire that we initially thought will satisfy us, we get so angry. And we lose all aspect of mind control, to speak of the intelligence kicking in. And that is why Krishna explains, you know, when we contemplate the objects of the senses, we develop great attachment for them. And when we try to fulfill them based on that great attachment, and we're dissatisfied with that attachment, we get angry, and once again we get thrown and tossed about in, okay, let's find another desire to try to fulfill this gap. So it goes on and on and on, and we're never, never satisfied. So this is what happens at the stage of bija, when we're planting the seeds for future sinful activities, basically. So it just doesn't end with us desiring and performing an activity. We're going to get two types of reactions that I mentioned earlier on. We're going to get the physical and the emotional reaction, but then we get to plant the seed for future actions to continue acting that way. So we're doomed in one sense. We're actually shooting ourselves in our foot, because we are just creating more and more cycle of desire after desire after desire. And what happens when desire is, when the mind is not satisfied, when we're not fulfilled, as I mentioned, we get angry and we act out nonsensically. We commit murders, we punch people, we do all sorts of things. Right, there was a case in Brisbane where there was a father who was angry at his wife, ended up going to the house, burning them, burning the kids, and then he killed himself. But everything ended in, you know, very, very quickly. So because he couldn't get whoever, I don't know, it doesn't bother me. Because we couldn't get the satisfaction we wanted from that one person, then our intelligence is completely shut down. We go and act in ways that don't make sense, like killing other people. I mean, that's just an extreme. It's an extreme example, but every day we can see that, well, at work, if we don't get our raise or our praise, we'll go and gossip about so-and-so. We'll go and make up some lie about this person. If you're dating a girl or a boy or whatever, whoever you're dating, if they don't satisfy you, you go online, you write nasty things about them, you post pictures about them, because you're dissatisfied with the way in which they were supposed to satisfy you. Right? They are the sense object you're meant to satisfy me. And you're dissatisfied with that, so you go to another person and do the exact same thing. So you keep on going in this little mill. You know, like, what's this animal? Hamster? Hamster, all day is just sitting, it's just going nowhere. Because the material desires, they're going nowhere. All day, every day, you can be sweating and thinking, yes, I'm doing this, but you're actually not getting anywhere. Because we cannot fulfill all material desires, because we are not matter. The spirit soul is Satchit Ananda, and only when we turn towards our spiritual identity and engage in activities that will nourish that spiritual identity, we will keep looking everywhere to try to fill that hole, but we cannot fill it with material activities. Hence the frustration. Hence the constant looking for new and different varieties of doing the same thing, chewing the chew. Right? You can go and do it in Dubai, you can go in South America and try to find whatever, you can go in Italy, come to Melbourne, you're chasing that satisfaction, you're chasing something that is not really there, because you're looking for it in material sense objects. But as soon as you come to Krishna consciousness, I know some people be like, oh, this is so cliche. You come to Krishna and everything is great and Hare Krishna. A lot of people when you speak to them on the street like, and then your life becomes all perfect. But no, it doesn't, because we're still in the mature body. We're still in the mature world. Life doesn't become perfect, but everything becomes clear. And because of that clarity and that soberness, we're able to live in this world in the way in which we're striving for the perfection of life, which takes lifetimes to achieve. So it's not so much about it's perfect. Every morning we wake up and we're floating on lotuses and everything is perfect and everyone is perfect and we have perfect bodies. Our bodies smell like rose petals and we don't need to sleep. We're awake all day and we just recite mantras all day. Okay, that doesn't really happen. Because most people have this idea of when you're doing something, spiritual activities mean, oh, it's all dandy, it's all glorious, it's all peaceful. No, we're doing things. We're going out there, we're working. You're running restaurants, you're running preaching centers, you have to deal with people, you're paying bills, you have to deal with people trying to cheat you. Life goes on, but there is a sense of clarity. There is a goal and purpose in life. Right, we understand our goal is Krishna Prem. We're trying to reach Krishna Prem, and along the way, we get purified and deal with everything. But at least we have that clarity and we have that goal. Right, we work on ourselves every day. Talk about self-awareness, and what do people call it these days? Being in the zone, being in the now, really for many terms. But on the all these things we're doing intrinsically because we're understanding what we are, what the body is, who we are, and who we are not, and we live our lives accordingly. And I've been thinking when I speak to people at work and they ask me, what did you do during the lockdown? Like, we were so bored and we're just drinking and sleeping. And I was like, oh. Well, you know, I was cooking, I was exercising, I was reading books, I was chanting like madness, and I had a service where I get to study the books and copy edit and correct the grammar, so I was busy. You know, I have things to do. But because apart from work, apart from career, for some people that's all life is about. So if they're not going to work, if they're not making money, if they're not going to the pub, if they're not going out clubbing, what are they going to do with themselves in a house with another person? Right? I think bottle was open, but you couldn't go out somewhere and start drinking. Like, people actually struggled being together. Which is like quite normal. You live with someone, what's the big deal? But a lot of people struggled. They needed something to punch. They needed to go get a drink from somewhere because they didn't know what to do with their mind. There's no other engagement. There's no work. Gyms were closed. It was like, what am I going to do with myself? Now it's you and your mind. And then another person and their mind. Can you deal with this situation for 2 weeks, for a month? And it was very difficult for a lot of people. They told me all the fights they had over nothing and how their minds were going out of control. And I was thinking, you know, the devotee lifestyle, we're so fortunate that we have, even if there's a lockdown, if you're stranded on a desert somewhere, something happens, you can always chance, you open a book, you read something. We can always remember Krishna's pastimes. We can keep ourselves active, actually. Because we have another purpose in life. Our purpose is not just to work and make money. We have something else that we do. We have a lifestyle that we dedicate to Krishna. So we actually have something to live for instead of just working to make money. And then when you can't do that, it's like, what's the goal of life? So the mind starts to go a little bit crazy. crazy when stuff like that happens. Whereas for devotees, like, what's the big deal? Life goes on. I'm still chanting Hare Krishna and reading and listening online. Life goes on. So coming to Krishna consciousness, one develops a level of clarity and one starts to understand who they are in relation to this world, in relation to Krishna, who is the source of both matter and spirit. And by doing that, we won't be so bothered by the ups and downs of this material world. Today is COVID-19. Next 3 years there might be some, I don't know, crocodile flu or something. And there's been birds, swine, now it's bad. It's just, and where is this all stemming from? Meat eating. When a lot of these things, you take it like it is meat eating. Lack of control for the tongue, lack of understanding that living entities are spirit souls and animals are citizens of the world, of the planet. They're not to be eaten, but to be taken care of. So if that's not there, there'll be all sorts of diseases. And Prabhupada used to say this all the time, because of this meat eating, all sorts of diseases will come. And not only that, even in the other tribes that people work in. I have a friend who the father back in Botswana was the manager or CEO of like the national abattoir. And she used to tell me how people who work there, they're always depressed. And I was like, before I became a devotee, I didn't think much of it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's sad. But as time went on, I could start understanding why people who work in that type of environment would be distressed. Because if you watch even a 5-minute clip of what happens inside, it is very horrific. Most of them go for counseling because to hear and to see the emotion of inflicting pain and horror on another living entity doesn't really sit well with a lot of people. It's one thing to have it all pink and whatever color it is in holes and movies. It's all packaged, it's nice, everything is good, factory, free range, whatever it is these days they put canola on. And people don't make that connection. I always say to my colleagues at work, just try to make that connection. It looks pink and fresh now, but where did it come from? And how was it all handled in the pink? And they can't think about it because they know it's horrific. And people who are in that environment, very, mode of ignorance. I mean, there's lots of blood and animals screaming and dying, it's just Even when I was a child growing up in African culture, it's very common. When there's a wedding, funeral, I don't know, whenever there's a party, uncles, aunties coming, you slaughter something and offer to the ancestors. And I remember as a kid, even just a chicken. Killing a chicken is like a basic thing. And I was always so horrified of it, not because it gets up and starts running around, but because I could hear the suffering in that animal. I mean, we'd have chickens in the end, we'd have dogs, we gave them names, they were pets, we'd play with them, and then all of a sudden they're on the table. So whenever it was one of them, I wouldn't eat it, because I'm like, nah, that was that little... We were just hanging out a few hours ago, and even I was once asked to remove the feathers, I couldn't do it. And the last time I was home, I remember it was for my father's funeral, and they had slaughtered an animal. And I remember walking in the yard towards the back, and I just saw everything. I was like, I cannot go that direction. And I remember my brother coming, like, I haven't seen you like 8 years. I'm like, after you take a shower, because I cannot deal with that situation. It's very cruel, actually, when you see and hear the animals. fight, not wanting to be killed. It's very, very difficult. So this is the world that we live in. We have situations, we may have come from such situations, and we have realizations about how dangerous these sinful activities are and how we try to be as careful as we can so we don't get caught in the reactions. Now we come to Krishna and Krishna says he will take care. You surrender, Krishna says he will protect us from all these sinful reactions. And even if we're unsuccessful in this lifetime, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, even if a yogi is unsuccessful after many, many years, what they've done is never lost. Whatever Krishna conscious or whatever service you've done to Krishna, Krishna always remembers that. So we're not into a quick fix. Even if we don't perfect our life, in the next lifetime, Krishna explains that he will give us a birth that will make it, that will give us more opportunities to come to him. So that is Krishna's kindness. So we cannot stop acting when we live in this material world, of course. So we try to act with desires to please Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, automatically, yes, we can also be pleased. Right? By pleasing the father, or by watering the root of the tree, everything else on that tree gets the nourishment that they need and the nourishment that they've been desiring. So it's all about transforming our desires. Instead of having our desires steeped in matter, we can have our desires aligned with Krishna and his pleasure. And when Krishna is experiencing pleasure, his devotees will also experience pleasure. Because Krishna likes to please the devotees. So I'll stop here for now and ask if there's any comments or questions.
This is for people listening online.
For all of you online.
Thank you for the nice class. It was very practical, and like personally you said, that people don't know what to do with their mind, but being devotees, we actually don't even have time. You know, like they have so much time, we actually don't. So that's interesting. My question is, Nectar of Devotion describes two types of sinful stages. One is where seeds are dormant, and one is not fructified. What's the difference between these two?
Seeds that are haven't been fructified, and that are what?
Lying dormant.
So like I mentioned, seeds that are lying dormant, I think that section which in explaining the root cause of suffering, that when we perform sinful actions, you produce certain desires, you plant the seed, and then that seed develops into different desires. And as you satisfy those desires, automatically at the same time, you're planting more seeds. So when they're lying dormant, it just means at some point in time, these desires are going to manifest and you'll want to satisfy them. So that's what it means when something is lying dormant. It's covered over, just like the child in the womb. All of his desires and everything, as the body and the subtle body matures, over time the desires will be satisfied and fulfilled. So it's not that they don't have any desires at all. It's just a matter of time. When conditions are right, all these desires have to be fulfilled. So lying dormant is still covered. Those that haven't are still yet to fructify also. It's just a matter of time and the suitable conditions, then they too also will have to be acted on. So that's what happens when you plant the seed. You get those two effects. The seed will fructify, and as you satisfy those desires simultaneously, you're planting more seeds for those desires.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, touching on the point about like association with materialistic people and how we should give up that kind of association, just like to get your opinion on association with our like material, like our family or our parents, they might be engaged in whatever activities.
Mm-hmm.
Do we just cease their association, or how do we go about that while practicing Krishna consciousness?
Okay. As someone who did it the wrong way, I will say, you know, when you come initially, you're excited about the process and everything is just amazing, and you're doing your chanting, and they see you and they see everything that you do to be foreign. Right? I grew up in a Christian household. I rock up in a sari and tilak, and chanting and pictures of Krishna, and they're like, oh my god, idol worship. Chanting funny things, you know, they couldn't understand, and I would push the philosophy on them without them realizing. So I'm like, rah, 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 and they're like, whatever. But at some point, there was friction. But after a few years, I realized just pump the brakes, treat them normally. We should be respectful to our parents. They raise us in such a way that we are able to make the decision to become devotees. So we give them respect, even though they're living a different lifestyle than what we're doing. But we still treat them with respect. And in due course of time, after then seeing how you have taken up the process and how that has transformed your life for the better, they'll start to ask questions. They'll want to come and visit you. They'll be fine with it, but it will take time because it's a foreign concept for people who are not from, you know, Asian countries. This whole mantras and wearing dhotis and saris is very, very confronting for them. And especially if you're a younger person, they'll think, well, are they going to take advantage of you? What are you going to do with your life? Are you worried? Just be the son that you were and share with them aspects of Krishna consciousness. Because I don't work for me, I take them sweets, and they were like, we like it. And that's all they ever talked about. To this day, they still speak about the sweets. Ajahn Chah Guruji once made me her Rocky Roads and that other fudge that's just far out, and they still talk about it. And the Mahaprasad for Horus can't get over it. So, prasadam sometimes does the job when philosophy can't. You know, just give one pakora a day to satisfy them. And after some time they get purified enough, they can ask questions. But the best thing to do is just be respectful and just try to share some aspect of Krishna consciousness with them without being too forceful. Because then they'll be thinking, I'm your parent, you're the kid, you're telling me about the world of life. Your parents will be like, Just share with them small things they'll appreciate. Give them some sweets, take them some flowers, they'll appreciate it. Thank you very much. 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 Thank you very much